Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Excited to have Dr. Ersin Religioso III on, also a DPT who has so many other letters behind his name that I'm not even going to go through because he's gone through so many residencies, fellowships, and courses that we'll talk about more on the podcast. Now, he is a fellowship-trained, cash-based PT practice owner, entrepreneur, blogger, and sought-after lecturer in the topic of modern manual therapy. He has a cash PT practice in Buffalo, New York area, Edge Rehab, and Sports Science, where he specializes in TMD, headaches, spinal care, runners, gymnasts, and chronic pain. His focus is seeing the patient as little as possible and empowering them with the education, self-assessment, and treatment strategies. Ersin has been a PT faculty at the local Buffalo PT schools, and he's also developed a line of manual therapy, mobility, fitness, strength, and rehab products, along with pain science education materials at Edge Mobility System. Now, his modern manual therapy, the eclectic approach, is his line of seminars for clinicians that are taught online and in live venues all over the world that include topics like manual therapy, patient education, blood flow restriction training, barbell therapy, and nutrition for clinicians. Dr. E is now also offering services as both an online clinician mentor to clinicians at Modern Rehab Mastery, traveling OMPT fellowship mentor, online patient consultations, and online business and social media consultations. And he also has a popular podcast called Untold Physio Stories. Additionally, he's an expert review board for so many other brands and companies, and most importantly, a family man married to the best woman in the world, as he says, and currently has six beautiful children. He really enjoys running with them, watching them in competitive gymnastics, and watching Disney Pixar movie. He's also a huge tech geek and loves all things Marvel, Star Wars, and Star Trek. And if you ever see Dr. E out and about or at a seminar, ask him to grab a coffee or beer and talk shop or anything, and he is game. This is such an interesting interview, and I'm so glad that we got to have him on. Dr. E, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I really just appreciate it. Like I said, before we even hopped on, having followed you for, my goodness, years now. I have your equipment. I have your tools. I follow your work. I think everything you've done is really incredible. So I just appreciate you being here and taking the time with us today.
I appreciate it, Jen. I mean, I think we haven't spoken since last time we interviewed you, and we did like the botched interview like in earlier in the year. And then like we caught up with you in like 5 or 6 months. And in that 5 or 6 months, you're like, yeah, you know, I just gained like 300,000 followers in that short period of time. So it's good to catch up. Yeah. I remember the first one, you were like outside and there was like sirens everywhere. And I was like, are you in some kind of emergency?
I know, it was not good. That was like my early days of not knowing what the heck I was doing. I was like, a podcast? Sure, I'll be on. Sure. I don't have a spot, but sure.
Yeah, I'll just go into a war zone and hit record and it'll be all good.
Right, the disaster of when they choose to record right next to a fire department or something. Well,
I'm like, well, she's doing something, right? Maybe it's all those sirens that gets her all the followers. Yeah, I don't know.
Now, I think that we're super excited to have you on to chat because, again, your name, your online presence, the modern manual therapist, like, I think this is a topic that needs to be talked about more because when we talk about manual therapies or different, you know, treatments like that, I feel like it's a world that's getting so combative and you have these manual therapies that are competing against each other and kind of want to trash and slander each other's names. And so we're excited to kind of cut through a lot of the myths and a lot of the BS and get your take on what some of these therapies actually do and where they can be valuable in people's rehabilitative or performance optimization paths. So what ended up leading you into kind of coining yourself in this category?
Well, so I've been a PT for like 24 years now. And, you know, when I graduated, I got my dual BS and MS, and then I decided to go right on for my doctorate. And I was so interested in spinal manipulation that my roommate and I, we thought, oh, hey, you know, what are our options? We can go to chiropractic school or we can do something else. And my last clinical instructor said, hey, have you ever heard of the University of St. Augustine in Stanley Parish? And I said, no. And way back then, I actually called and inquired about a program. You know, there was like no website or anything. It was like an ad in a journal for their new doctorate program. So I was one of the first doctor of physical therapy in New York State. And they had like a residency-based model where you just studied with a mentor and you learned manual therapy. And that's how I learned all about manual therapy initially. And from one of the guys who founded like one of our major or one of our fellowship programs and the FAAOA MPT, which is like our fellowship accreditation organization. So I was always interested in manual therapy. And, you know, in the first like 5 years of my career, I decided, you know, there's all these gurus out there that I really admire. And someday I'm basically just going to be the Highlander of all of them. And, you know, like there could be only one, like when my goal was, I'm going to learn from all of them. And when they all die off, I'm going to take their place. And I really, yeah, it was pretty arrogant, you know, and I had like this, the total opposite, whatever the opposite of imposter syndrome was my problem. I just thought I knew everything. I thought, you know, I reveled in it when people thought I had magic hands. And, you know, I ended up like starting a practice. And right around the time I started a practice was when my wife had, she was going on our third kid because we have six kids now. She's a PT too.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Yeah, I know. It's a lot. It's awesome though. The more the merrier. Yeah, I know it sounds crazy. Everyone always has one kid extra in their mind that they think is crazy. So right around the time when I started my practice and she was about to have our third child, I was just leaving a clinic that I managed, and you know, it was a very cushy job, but it was never my goal to work for anyone. So I said, I'm gonna start my own practice. And she said, well, that's great. And I'm not gonna go back to work because, you know, working part time in home care, we're just gonna be basically paying for daycare, you know. So I'm gonna try to stay home with the kid. And I said, all right, well, I have barely any income. I'm leasing like the cheapest car that I could afford. And I just developed this thing that I called the Foscillator, which Jen probably has, the edge mobility tool. Mm-hmm. Way back then, I thought that it actually broke up fascia. So I called it the Foscillator because I thought, you know, it was like this this device that came from the future to destroy your fascial adhesions. That's what I would like jokingly say, like the Terminator.
The Terminator of fascia.
Yeah. I'm a big sci-fi nerd. Sorry if it's going to come out. It may not appeal to your audience. I'll try to keep it real.
Please let it loose. Yeah.
So I started blogging and, you know, like before Instagram and podcasts and every other thing where we find great information now, I started a blog because my whole thing was, you know, when you buy a hammer, there's no reason to go back to hammer.com, right? Because it's like a one-off tool. And unless I could have like a couple of instructional videos. But for me, I had to keep on driving content before I even knew anything about social media. I just wanted people to be interested in different ways to use the tool. And then it turns out that because I had learned from like six or seven different of the big gurus and got certified, and you know, I took like over maybe 50 to 75 courses in the first 5 years of my practice, I just had a lot to say. So it was like people started following me. Initially, I actually like reached out to other people who were just like burgeoning in social media. I was like, oh, there are PTs in social media. Let me reach out to them and say, hey, please share my stuff. And it turns out that, you know, none of these people knew me. I wasn't vetted by any of them. They were like, no, we don't know you. We're not going to share your stuff. So, you know, my goal was like, well, okay, well, I'm going to like just develop such awesome content that I'm going to smash all you guys, because I was just like still in my arrogant mode and I wasn't in humble mode yet. So that's just basically like how it all started. You know, I what came to be Modern Manual Therapy and Eclectic Approach arose out of this blog. And then just real quick, like shortly, like a year or two into writing this blog, I was always posting pictures about me deforming fascia and I was bruising everyone. And, you know, I would tell my students, if you don't bruise someone by the end of your first week, you're not doing it right. And I think like many clinicians who use manual therapy, and this goes right into, I think, a lot of the public misconceptions and even clinician misconceptions there are about manual therapy, is I was a victim of my own success. You know, I was taught to be as aggressive as possible. I thought we had to put something back into place. We had to break up fascia and we had to be super aggressive. And because I bruised someone, and they eventually felt better. I thought I had to do that. But 2 years into writing my blog, a bunch of evidence-based, what I call the evidence-based police invaded my blog. They called me a dinosaur. They presented me with a bunch of articles, and I had two choices. I could either say, well, I'm doing everything wrong in my clinic, and I'm doing everything wrong in my practice, and I'm also teaching in three different PT schools. I'm teaching in three different fellowship programs, and I'm teaching all these students wrong at the graduate level and a postgraduate level, or I'm right. You know, so I argued with them for about a month, and I really kind of took a critical look at this research, and I was like, oh, I am doing everything wrong. So that was the beginning of my humble journey and me forming what's called modern manual therapy, because my goal is to teach the public and clinicians and mostly the public through clinicians that, you know, manual therapy works and there's definite great uses for it, but it's not the end all be all. And it is definitely not a quick fix.
Oh, that is so, I mean, I love that we kind of steered in this direction now, because that's exactly what we want to go into, is really helping, you know, everyone start to understand this idea of what hands-on treatment is really doing for your body, and that all the different types of hands-on treatment. Because like you said, I mean, I think some of the things that still go viral, you know, are shown to be bruising patients, or, you know, using the tools to be able to get the skin as red as possible, or make sure that the techniques are really aggressive and going really hard, or using these crazy tools to really jam into different muscles. And so those are some of the things that I think the general population still sees as, this is what my body needs. This is the only thing that's really going to relieve this tension, to break up this scar tissue, to release my fascia. So can we go back to kind of what you said about even just bruising, the fact of bruising? Like, why is that not something that you teach anymore?
Right. Yeah, that was a hard thing to give up. Again, if you look really early on my blog, there's probably still pictures. I leave them up there for posterity, you know, to show that if I can change, then anyone can change. And literally, I built a whole career and even started my social media by getting popular by bruising people. So some of these research articles that are actually probably well over a decade old now. So we're talking we've known for over 10 years that you can't break up fascia, that you can't break up scar tissue, that the human body is so strong and resilient that it takes literally thousands of pounds of force to deform fascia 1%. And it makes sense, right? Like, you're a gymnast, right?
Yeah.
You know, the amount of ground reaction force every single time you land, it's like multiple times your body weight, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like your ankles, the fascia in your ankles and your calves get blown to smithereens every single time you do that, right? Yeah. So it's a really simple question I often ask people, and they're like, oh, can't you just adjust me and put my pelvis back into place? Like, my PT or my chiro or my massage therapist says my pelvis is rotated. And I always have several answers to that. So the first and foremost simple one is, if I'm in a gym and there's a box there, I'll jump up and down off the box. Or if I'm just in my clinic, I'll literally jump up and down on my leg as hard as I can, making as loud as a sound as I can, you know, and I'll just say, does your chiro or your PT or your osteopath, do they adjust you or manipulate you as hard as I'm jumping on the ground right now? And the answer, usually, I hope, is, well, of course not. And I'm like, well, look, this is not making my hip go out of place. So, you know, I tell them, you know, people really enjoy stories, because that's why, you know, that's how we relate to one another. And it makes things like research more relatable. And I say, look, there's surgeons who I've heard on podcasts, particularly one ER surgeon who says that, you know, he sees people in head-on car accidents, which, again, quite a bit more force than probably the most aggressive therapist is going to manipulate or adjust you. Then when they're hit head on, their femur or their hip bone actually fractures before their pelvis goes out of place. Like, that's how strong the pelvis is, right? So that's kind of that kind of made me think, number one. And number two, I would say, look, even if we really were breaking up scar tissue or breaking up adhesions in the tissues, what would be the difference between, you know, me using my edge tool or someone using a mobility gun, which are really popular, or even something simple like a PVC pipe or a black foam roll or a white foam roll or, a foam roll with spikes all over it. What would be the difference? Like, why would that feel good if you were breaking it up? Like, but if you fall and you twist your ankle and you rupture a ligament, or you fall and you fall a certain way and you put your arm out of place, or you rupture a rotator cuff muscle, like those things hurt because they're traumatic. So if we actually broke up scar tissue, it would be an acute injury and it wouldn't feel good. It would feel bad, you know? And that's what people are like, oh yeah, I guess that does make sense. Like,
so why do you think that sticks so much for people, this whole concept of, you know, getting put back into place? Because even, you know, members of our family that will come to us and just say, oh, I just met with my chiropractor and he put my knee back into place. My tibia was slightly rotated and you know, posterior a little bit, and he did it. And then she gets bumped by a dog. I'm thinking about a specific family member right here. So hopefully or hopefully not, she's listening to this. We'll see. And then she kind of has a dog bump into her knee and says, oh my gosh, my knee, like, it's going to get bumped back out of place now. So like, why do you think people grab onto this concept of like, oh, you just need to fix me?
Well, it's simple, because it makes sense, you know, and there's a joint sound usually with certain techniques. Like basically, you know, when I teach spinal manipulation for a living, I call it the original reset. It's like the only thing that even people who have watched me teach for years, if I get like a huge crack out of particular manipulation, I always hear a gasp on the camera. Like it almost makes the person filming it pass out. It sounds like they're going to pass out, or it's actually shocking. I mean, I've seen people who are like in social media with me for like 15 years, they come hang out in my course, you know, and I do some like soft tissue technique and it's just like par for the course, right? And I do a manipulation on someone's elbow and it's so loud and it sounds like a gunshot. And like even the people who have been clinicians for like 15, 20 years still gasp because it's like, it's a crazy sound, right? It's just like, and people just think, well, what is that sound? And it's a simple thing to say, oh, well, being out of place makes you have pain for whatever reason. And this joint sound that you're hearing is putting things into place. I mean, it's just, people have believed that for as long as movement and ears have existed. And for some reason, you know, people think that like when they move and the crack, when someone does something to them and there's a crack, that it's good. But if they move a certain way and there's a crack, that it's bad. But I'm just like, you know, a crack is a crack, right? Because people are like, oh my gosh, my knee just cracked or my ankle just cracked. What does that mean? Or every time I do this, my neck cracks. I'm like, look, Jedi mind trick number one is you have two choices. You can either keep on moving when you hear a crack, or you can stop moving forever. What do you choose to do? And only one patient so far ever has ever said, I think I'm going to stop moving forever. And they meant it. But the majority of people realize that, of course, the option is to keep on moving, right? Yeah. It makes sense. And it's hard because, you know, especially even earlier this week, I saw a patient that I hadn't seen in like 12 years. And I was probably more of an a la carte, what I call an a la carte clinician back then. She's like, oh, I have a little bit of hamstring tightness and I have this and I have this and I need you to work on this. And I need you to work on this. And I probably would have been happy to oblige that. And I'm like, look, I'm a doctor, you know, like I'm not a technician. This isn't just what I call a la carte physical therapy. You're not just going to pick soft tissue, a little bit of soft tissue work for my arm, and I'll have by this off a side dish of spinal manipulation. And, you know, like I'm the one making the decisions here. It was like 40 minutes of my 1 hour appointment of de-educating everything that I had actually told her so long ago. Because I even told her, like, look, even if you never see me again, I want to make sure that you feel empowered that, you know, obviously you've been going to this chiro, you'd be going to another PT, they're doing all this, you know, active release on your forearm and it has temporary relief. And that's the biggest thing, which leads us back to what manual therapy is for. It gives you a temporary window of improved mobility and improved pain thresholds, regardless of the technique. I don't care if it's needling or, you know, what's called spinal adjustment if you're a chiropractor, or manipulation if you're a PT, or joint mobilization, or active release, or pin and stretch, or rolling, or corrective exercise. Literally anything that has a rapid change, or anything that appears to be a quick fix, it's that temporary, right? So Jedi mind trick number two is, you know, if research shows you that this only gives you maybe like a 1 to 2 hour period where you feel better and move better, what are you going to do, right? Like it's a temporary window. So the Jedi mind trick is, you going to someone like me or Jen or whoever and expecting us to do something to you to get fixed is like you going to a personal trainer, having them work out for you and you getting jacked. Like at some point you have to put in the work once we do give you this temporary window. Like, and that's my whole thing. That's how I teach modern manual therapy is I don't care what the treatment is. I care what the program is that you give the patient, because that's the thing that makes them better, not the temporary treatment or the temporary improvement that they get from you.
Mm, I like that analogy of, you know, watching your trainer work out and expecting it to translate over to you somehow. Right.
And also everything you just said is just way less sexy of an answer than, hey, just let me do this and it fixes you and puts you back into place. And I think that's another huge learning curve and challenge to educating patients or clients this way versus saying, come in, I'll do this, it'll fix it.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and you know, when people say like, that's hard. And I said, yeah, that the hardest thing to learn from me is to somehow work it into your explanations to everyday patients as to why this stuff is working. And honestly, we've known since at least 2007, 2008, that manual therapy does not put back into things into place. It doesn't, you know, correct a subluxation. It doesn't, prone press ups don't reduce disc protrusions, and spinal subluxations don't cause pain, and hips don't go in and out of place, and even arthritis doesn't really directly cause pain. All these things may potentially sensitize the system, which is what I tell people. You know, Greg Lehman, if you guys haven't had him on the podcast, you should. He talks about everything, like recovery is like a cup. So the day before, it doesn't matter if you did too many, you know, kettlebell swings or deadlifts or something, your back started hurting, or you did too much gardening, or you just did too much sitting. The day before your back started hurting, let's just imagine you have like a 16 ounce cup and it's only like a fourth full of water. That 3/4 empty cup or air is your buffer zone of how much can you lift, how long can you sit, how long can you stand. It's also how far can you bend. So it's like mobility and function and everything. Every little thing starts to fill up the cup. So if you have a lack of variability, or if you do essentially too much of one thing and not enough of another, the cup starts to fill up and fill up and fill up and fill up. So again, something that we've known forever, pain is caused by a perception of threat, and it could be a real threat or it could just be a perception of threat. So anytime the nervous system either detects threat or, which again, could be an actual trauma, or it could just say that, you know, Dr. E has sat too long in addition to doing kettlebell deadlifts and then driving in a car for like 5 hours. So the back is going to be irritated now. So that once this alarm goes off in the brain, the cup starts off for the next couple of days during what we call the acute phase as like 3/4 full as opposed to 1/4 full. So now your buffer zone of how long can you sit, how much can you lift, how far can you bend, it's all quite a bit less. And then the more and more, the less, you know, the for whatever reason that we can't predict, people have pain for longer periods of time. And then the brain starts to actually kind of artificially shrink the cup. So now you might even start with your cup half full, like closer to where it used to be. But since the cup is smaller and you have atrophy and like disuse atrophy because you're just not using, you know, you're not moving as much as you should have, and you Googled it and it said like deadlifts are bad for you or running is bad for your knees or all this other garbage that you hear from like really negative clinicians. You know, there's no good movements or bad movements. There's no good exercises or bad exercises. There's only too much of one thing and not enough of another. So essentially what I tell people is, you know, the majority of people, if you have pain that comes and goes, you're doing two things. You're doing too much to fill up the cup. You're not doing enough to empty it. And essentially also you need to fill up a bigger cup, which is really three things. But when you tell people that, and I'm like, look, we don't really know what manual therapy does. All I know is it decreases your sensitivity. Mm. And you're also doing a bunch of things that increase your sensitivity. It could be that you're sitting too long. It could be that you get poor sleep. It could be that you have a terrible diet that's a bit more inflammatory than it should be. So all these things that we can manage, which I put on what I call a recovery plan and not homework, because no one likes to do homework. But when you tell them like, you're like, hey, Jen, I have some homework for you, be like, oh man, I have to do homework, right? Like the connotation behind homework is like, I have to do this because it's good for me, but I don't want to do it, versus like, oh, I'm going to give you a recovery plan. If you follow the steps, you're going to recover. You'd be like, oh yeah, now I'm psyched, right? So everything I try to make as positive as possible, and I'm trying to, you know, take these super unsexy, complex neurological explanations and make them as simple as possible by using something like that cup analogy, which tells people that if you avoid the things that sensitize your system and you do a high dosage of things that desensitize your system along with a couple other behavioral changes, then typically you're going to recover. That's it, period.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a great explanation. Hopefully people are really starting to take this in. I think that's the hardest thing, you know, is like I've been told something for so long that how do I start to make that change in my mind? I think that's the hardest thing. I've relied on this certain clinician. I've relied on this belief that someone else is really putting me back into place or someone else is really fixing me. So being able to, you know, rewire your mind upon what that really means and how you can start to use that with a clinician still, but in a different way in your life, I think is so incredibly important to start to really hear. And I love also that you call it a recovery plan. I think that's a brilliant way to kind of shift that mindset of it as well. But now when someone is told, okay, well, I should foam roll or I should get this Theragun or I should, you know, do all these things at home myself, like how often, how effective, how much should someone start to care about, you know, how much self-manipulation or not manipulation or self-massage, soft tissue work they're doing on themselves?
Well, I'm not opposed to anyone doing the majority of these things because, again, they just temporarily empty the cup. I mean, I'm very big into what I call resets or repeated end range loading. It's very much like McKenzie, but I don't teach McKenzie because I was sent to a cease and desist from them after I stopped teaching for them.
Oh my gosh.
That I'm not actually using their concepts. I mean, I can teach their concepts. I just don't teach officially their actual stuff. But I mean, I think it's brilliant and it's easy stuff that anyone can do. Plus, it doesn't require equipment. I mean, if I use like an edge mobility band or an edge tool on someone or any equipment, I'm not just doing it for sale because I do say, look, all you have to do is this simple, you know, end range loading stretch. It's like a simple stretch that's usually the opposite of whatever it is you were doing because whatever it is you're doing wasn't working. And the opposite direction is a bit more novel to your brain and it's more likely to kind of give a green light and thus reset the area and empty the cup. So, you know, for people, as much as people love foam rolling out while they're on TikTok and in the you know, the recovery pit and everything, my question is, if I told you you didn't have to foam roll or use the massage gun or stretch, like static stretching, my favorite thing not to do, would you really do it? You know, and people are like, well, again, 90% of people are like, oh, if I don't have to do it, no, I wouldn't. It's like, actually, if I didn't have to eat healthy, I probably wouldn't do that either. You know what I mean? So when someone actually tells you, that's probably not going to prevent injury, like, oh, so I don't really have to do this. You know, most people wouldn't do it. And, you know, I'd say like the best warm-up is not like foam rolling or anything. You can do that stuff if you want to, but the best warm-up is really like a lighter version of whatever it is you're going to do. You know, you don't see these people who, you know, I'm a big runner and I love to strength train too. But at a race, if you ever run like a 5K or a marathon or a half marathon or anything, the people who win the marathons who make you feel really bad are like the ones who are actually running backwards when you're still running forwards. You never see, you know, those people, right? I don't know. You might even be one of those people, Jen.
No way. I'm not a runner.
Those people. Okay. Well, those people, you never see the people who win the race doing static stretching or foam rolling before or after the race. You know, so I'm just a big, big believer in mostly just like strength training and good cardio. And again, because research hasn't really shown that stuff like static stretching or foam rolling or, you know, massage guns actually prevent injury. Now, they do give a temporary window where you may feel better and move better. So my thing is, what are you going to do with that window? Right. Now is the time when you should actually go strength train or lift or do whatever it is that you're normally going to do. Like I do a bunch of resets on my ankle and my hip and my shoulder and my mid back because I know all the joints where I am a bit more asymmetrical than I should be. In running, you need a lot of symmetry. You need a lot of balance typically because running is one of the easiest things to overdo it because it's such a symmetrical, non-variable activity. So I don't have any reason to do these things 10 times an hour. Like I tell people who are in pain, because people who are in pain typically need to reset 10 times an hour or enough to stay ahead of it, enough to keep emptying the cup faster than you can fill it up. But for me, I only need to do it for that temporary, like 1 to 2 hour window where I'm going to work out or run, just so I'm at less risk for injury. Mm. But ultimately, does it prevent injury? No, it doesn't. I mean, the best thing that prevents injury is strength training. That's why I'm such a fan of it. Mm.
I think this is so great. And I just love that, you know, being that your name online and your persona is Modern Manual Therapy, you know, you're even willing to say like, is using a foam roller, is doing some sort of self-massage, you know, beneficial to do before a workout? Well, there are likely better things that you can do. And I think this is just one of the biggest issues with so many people that practice or utilize different manual therapies. Like if they were willing to admit and distill it down to kind of what you're telling me, is that many of these physiologically don't do much other than temporarily empty that cup. And that's tearing down the identity of a lot of workers and a lot of people that utilize these techniques and tell people something special or magical is happening. And it would probably make a lot of courses that people take a whole lot shorter as well in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
But
I have a weekend course, and I, you know, one of my taglines is you don't need seven courses of minutia to get easy results, to get rapid, amazing results. And that's the thing. I still think manual therapy is super effective. But if you see me in an hour visit, I may only put my hands on someone for like 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is to get them to be able to do some sort of loading strategy repeatedly throughout the day as pain-free as possible. I want the recovery plan to be as pain-free as possible. And that's where I think the art of manual therapy is lost, because there's so many anti-manual therapy.
Yeah.
Like strength coach, PT, hybrid, like everyone is like bridging the gap, right, Jen? Everyone's bridging the gap between strength training and rehab. And I get it. And that's great, because strength training, like everyone needs strength training. And one of my friends says that, strength training is actually the only evidence-based treatment that's good for every single condition known to man, right? Like whether it's depression or, weight loss or low back pain, like literally everyone should be strength training. But even if something like, you know, tendinopathy, what used to be called tendonitis research shows like, oh, they need loading, and it's okay to tell them to exercise into pain because ultimately they still need loading. I think that, you know, you might be an amazing strength coach, but if you have the means to reset someone's pain and make the recovery plan more pain-free and you just don't do it because like you're against it, then I think that makes you kind of a jerk. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I can just like wrap an edge mobility around someone who's doing heel drops for their Achilles and it's going to make them feel better, they're also less likely to fall off the recovery plan. Mm-hmm. You know, if it hurts, even if you say, hey, it's okay to do if it hurts, there's still going to be a good amount of people who aren't going to follow the plan, or at least not load enough with a high enough intensity to actually make a difference. Like it's okay to load and have pain, but the whole reason why people are, you know, coming to see you in the first place is because they have pain and they don't want to have the pain when they do these things. So
exactly.
That's where I think manual therapy comes in. I think we can really do a great service, but the ultimate goal should be not to fix people, but to get them to be able to do their plan, whatever is actually going to fix themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the most important things that really we're in agreement on with a lot of people who might have this previous mindset of, oh, it fixes me. And we can agree with them on like, oh, it gives you that temporary pain relief, you know, and it gives you the ability to do more, but why not now start to build up that system and build up that resilience? I'm kind of like you're saying, whether it's with strength training, whether it's with starting on a different but specific recovery plan. I want to kind of return back to, because I think a lot of manual therapy conversations surround symmetry or how our body looks. Mm-hmm. And you kind of even mentioned a minute ago that you might be slightly more asymmetrical in certain areas of your body than others. And everyone wants to, you know, kind of has this obsession with the perfect posture or looking symmetrical or having the same rotation on one side versus the other. So to what degree is having any sort of symmetry in our body important? How much should we be aware of it? What do we do if we find asymmetries in the body?
Well, I think it's something that's easy and it's sexy to point out and people get it, just like something being in and out of place and then hearing a crack and thinking that it goes in place and that's why you feel better. So it's super easy to look at especially a mobility asymmetry or a balance asymmetry and say, hey, that's the reason why you have your knee pain. So when do you correct an asymmetry? You correct it when it's actually causing the pain. Mm-hmm. right? It's as simple as that. And I would say the larger the asymmetry is, the more likely it is to cause the pain. And this is like somewhat sports specific. Like there have been people who I've seen who have very limited ankle mobility in their left ankle, and they're like some sort of world-class javelin thrower, and they were getting all this amazing elbow treatment for their elbow, and they were considering elbow surgery, but it all came down to the fact that they had like not the best knee rehab for like an ACL repair or something, and they had very limited ankle and lower leg mobility, so they couldn't plant as well, and they couldn't rotate their trunk backward as well, so they were just stressing their elbow during like both a wind up phase and a throwing phase of a javelin. I mean, I don't know what it's actually called because I'm not a javelin thrower. So to some degree like that, asymmetry might matter a lot, right? If it's very sports specific, but to someone who is like a weekend warrior, who I say their only workout is basically walking to and from their car because otherwise they're just in front of a computer or in front of a TV all day. It, you know, as much as like something like the FMS or the Sucta functional movement assessment might sell it, like I don't think ankle mobility for a weekend warrior is going to help like their right shoulder impingement or their right shoulder pain.
Yeah.
And another way to look at this too is Chris Johnson, one of my buddies who mostly works with high-end triathletes, he showed in his running course this amazing video like 5-6 years ago, two fastest female runners in the world. The fastest one in the world has like this crazy wonky gait where like, you know, her trunk is not rotating. He's rotating like maybe 90 degrees one way and 10 degrees the other. She has an asymmetrical arm swing, which if you have an asymmetrical arm swing, it means you have an asymmetrical leg swing. One of her legs also is like totally caving in. It looks like she should have anyone would say, oh man, she's probably for sure got some knee pain on that side. Yet she doesn't have any pain and she's the fastest woman in the world. Second fastest woman in the world, maybe let's just say half a second behind her, which at their pace is a crazy distance, right? It's like a really big distance when you're the two fastest people in the world. The second fastest woman in the world, perfectly symmetrical gait, right? I think it's a great example to say, do you always work on asymmetry? No, you don't always work on it. But when someone is injured or when they have pain and when you find asymmetries, I'd say it's a good thing to work on because I don't know, I seem to work on it and people still get better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, and now how would someone know, okay, when should I go see someone then? Like when would manual therapy for me be something I should look into? Like when should I go see a clinician, or do I just need to exercise more? Do I just need to go see a personal trainer? Like how do we then start to kind of identify, well, if I'm in pain, when are these treatments necessary?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I would say there are people who have preference, right? Preferences for manual therapy. Preferences are essentially just like any kind of preference you might have. You might have a preference for pizza or sushi or a certain type of beer or coffee or whatever. If you have a preference, you've had good results with manual therapy, whether it's kneeling or anything in the past, you should seek someone out. But ultimately, you should seek someone out with a message of, I'm doing this so you can get back to doing these strategies, or I'm doing this, which is a passive strategy, but I'm going to give you active strategies to make you better. Because again, another one of my Jedi mind tricks, and people are like, don't you just have a quick fix? I'm like, do you have a problem with activity? And they're like, well, yeah, I have a problem with activity. Well, then you need an active solution, because all these things that you've gone to in the past and you say do make you better, would they really make you better if I'm like the fifth therapist that you're actually seeing? You know what I mean? So all those things temporarily make you better, which make them passive strategies. Someone's doing them to you. And if you got better with passive strategies, that's fine. Then you don't need to change something about your activity. Because there are people who, for whatever reason, they get adjusted once or twice. They get a massage once or twice and they never need to go back. It could be that overall their cup, you know, wasn't really that full to begin with and only needed to be emptied once. The majority of people that I think a PT sees versus like your average chiro who just has like gets acute spinal pain a lot as their clients, they tend to be a bit easier. But you know, someone who ends up in my doors, I'm like the 10th clinician they see, they may need manual therapy again if they've tried other things. They've tried modifying their exercises. You've tried resting. Don't rest too long. But I would say if you have problems with any kind of activity that doesn't seem to be resolving with rest or modification of activity within 2 to 3 weeks, I would usually try to seek someone out, manual therapy or not, just a good anyone like a good PT, good chiro, a good even personal trainer who just promotes active strategies. It's the people who don't promote active strategies and who claim to fix you. Those are the ones who I think people need to avoid.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the perfect, and that's very similar to advice Jen and I give people when we're telling people to seek out a provider. And you know, our goal is never, ever, ever to slander any specific type of profession, because as we know, there's good and bad in everything, just the same way there's good and bad mechanics, there's good and bad accountants, all across the board. That's the same way with manual practitioners, but we recommend to look for the people who, yes, might do the manual therapy, especially if it's one that you prefer, but also give you that active strategy so that you can get back to the activities that you might be looking for. I kind of wanted to touch one more thing having to do with like fascia and scar tissue or just disorganized tissue, even when you brought up tendinopathies. I mean, really what that means is the tissue at this tendon is relatively disorganized. And, you know, our goal with whatever strategy moving forward, whether that's a recovery or an active rehabilitative plan, is to somehow get that tendon operating a little bit better, to optimize the function of that tendon or the fascia that might be disorganized. So can we and are we able to reorganize this fascia, scar tissue, or the tissues at tendons? And does manual therapy help in that along with different active strategies? Or, you know, do we not see much of a difference between just doing exercise or strength training versus if we add manual therapy in?
I think research has pretty much shown that for something like a tendinopathy, loading is obviously the best strategy. And I alluded to it earlier, you know, loading usually for an active tendinopathy is painful. So for me, I just use manual therapy to what I call modulate or reset that pain just so you can load better. You know, when I was looking at stuff to try to prove that you need to do instrument assisted work, like when I was trying to sell my Edge tool, there's not a lot of research out there that shows that you can actually reorganize disorganized tissue. It's usually done in rats and rat tendons, and that doesn't actually, you know, I always say that's not like, that doesn't really apply to how human tendons behave. Yeah. Other studies on fascia are usually done on fresh cadavers, and I usually say, like, you know, unless you're working on The Walking Dead, that's also not really applicable because even something as simple as like a trigger point that absolutely seems like a physical entity and you feel it in your trap every single time that you rub it or someone else rubs it, you don't see trigger points. They're not like actually hard nodules in fresh cadavers. They're just gone. You know, if they were actually physical knots that needed to be rubbed out, they would exist. There'd be like hard nodules of fascia or bunched up muscle or scar tissue in the middle of the upper trap, but there aren't. So it's actually like a lot of these things that you feel, and you might be able to feel like with a tool, or you might be able to feel with your hands, they're actually like a dysfunction of like the brain is almost causing like excessive tone in an area that is overly sensitized to touch. It's a dysfunction of touch. Otherwise it's not there if you don't touch it or someone else doesn't touch it. So in terms of like the reorganization though, it's absolutely possible to do it with exercise. And in terms of, you know, what people say about stretching tissues or reorganizing tissues, you know, a long time ago, and I think it's still kind of taught that they say that like when muscles tighten up, the fibers of the muscle, which are called actin myosin, like the fibers, if you look at them as like a bunch of like parallel fibers, like an E and a three kind of going together, we're taught that like, oh, when a muscle is tight, those fibers are closer together. When a muscle is weak and overly stretched, that E and a three are much further apart. But it turns out that that's not really true. When a muscle is tight, it's only the feeling of tightness, or it's a bad feeling in the muscle. Because what they did a couple studies, they took muscles where they artificially induced tightness by casting them for like 4 to 6 weeks, and then they kept on serially casting them, meaning like if my elbow is stuck at 90 degrees. Then they would bring it into a little bit more straightening by 5 or 10 degrees every week. So literally we're talking 24/7 stretching. And then they would take like a tissue sample of the muscles that was supposedly lengthening, right? The E and a three kind of getting stretched out. But it took literally 4 to 6 weeks of 24/7 stretching, which is much longer than most people are willing to statically stretch, before the muscle grew longer. And it grew longer, not by the tissues growing apart, like the E and the three growing apart, but more sarcomeres, or more of those E's and threes actually grew in series. So it's almost like, instead of hypertrophying or growing wider, like when muscles grow stronger and wider as a result of a lot of load, like that takes a lot of load and it takes a lot of time. And stretching is the same way. I'm not saying it's impossible to reorganize tissues. I'm saying that if you really want to do that, you would do a minimum 30 minute static stretch a day. But even again, 24/7 static stretching, the muscles actually have to grow longer. And that's why we know these things are mostly changes in perception or emptying the cup, because perception can be changed quickly, but tissue cannot. Mm-hmm. Tissues can lengthen, but they lengthen in the same rate at which they grow from hypertrophy, which is a long time over a lot of load.
That's so, again, just another important, thing to point out for people to understand, that idea of lengthening and contraction of tissue, and what is really happening if I'm stretching, what's really happening if I'm loading. I think, getting these ideas, and hopefully people can start to really wrap their brains around this, or ask better questions to clinicians, or feel more empowered, to be able to do that and guide their own journey with a clinician, I think is so incredibly huge.
And I think Jen and I always like to talk too about when someone's under anesthesia, when they're getting like a knee or a hip replaced, and there's this idea that, oh, my hamstrings are so tight, my quad is so tight, whatever it is, and I just can't get it to lengthen. Well, when you're under anesthesia and someone's replacing your hip, they can damn near put your foot up by your ear, and that hamstring definitely has the capacity to lengthen to that point, but that's when the perception and all sensation is completely removed. And then when somebody wakes up, that perceived threat, reappears, and now they've just had a surgery. So how do we get that perception to melt away and reduce? And I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I do things like mobility bands, but I also, when I transitioned from beating everyone up to going as light as possible, like now I scrape someone with my edge tool with the force of a cat or dog licking you, and I wrap mobility bands, not like mobility wad style, where it's like you got to wrap so hard, you only have a 20 to 30 second window before your limb goes numb. I wrap like it's like a hug for your limbs. Yeah. And I just tell people, look, if there's nothing magical about this, but when someone, like, I don't care if you're super flexible, but like my four girls are competitive gymnasts, and a lot of them still think they have tight hamstrings, right? All the gymnasts that I work with, as a result of having four competitive gymnasts for daughters, they swear they have tight hamstrings. But when I tell them the forward bend, I always say, I'd have to dig a hole in front of you to actually get your true hamstring length, so everyone thinks they have tight hamstrings, but it's merely just a perception. But if anyone has ever been pushed by a coach, like I used to do a ton of martial arts, and they used to just like sit me in a machine that would literally like crank me into a straddle split, yeah. Like it would just go like crank and crank and crank and crank, and your legs would just go further and further and further out. I wish I had mobility bands for that, because once you're in, no matter what your limit is, you can be a super stiff person with a terrible straight leg raise, or you can be super flexible person. But once you're at your limit, no one ever wants to get pushed past the perception of a stretch. So many times when the cup is actually almost full, that perception of a stretch comes on a lot sooner. So you do something like scraping, or you do something like wrapping with a mobility band. The mobility band, all you do is you feel the compression, but now you no longer feel the stretch. So if you don't feel the stretch, then that's why you kind of automagically get your motion back. And that's the way, again, that manual therapy, no matter what the technique, it all works on the change of the perception, and even like the salesmanship of it, right? Like if you just say, hey, this is going to work, and you're just like an amazing charismatic person, and they have a lot of trust in you, which is called therapeutic alliance, you're also just going to get better outcomes. I mean, I beat everyone up and I told them, this, you're going to be bruised, and you can take a picture of that bruise and sell it on eBay, and we'll just call it my autograph when I get famous. And everyone would laugh, right? Because they just assumed that I knew what I was talking about and I could sell it. But again, it turns out that you don't need to be that aggressive. And there is one thing I would like to say, though, because you touched upon it several times, Dominic, because this absolutely happened to me. When I say that this stuff doesn't work for the reason why we think, that's all I mean. I'm not saying that manual therapy is not effective, or I'm not saying that whoever's listening to this, if you're getting ART, that it's not helping, or if you get adjusted, that it's not helping, or whatever it is that is helping, because all of these techniques work. Because immediately, yes, did I go on the offensive? Did I start like raging against everyone who was trying to tell me I was a dinosaur? Yeah, I did. But I mean, because again, like I said, I was a victim of my own success. These things work. They just don't work for why we think they work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really important to remember. And also giving that, allowance for people, like, you can still continue to do the things that feel great for you, but just understand a little bit more of what it's actually doing. And I think that's that education piece and that empowerment to get back into movement and how powerful that is, which is truly the fix for people, truly the thing that's going to keep us moving long term. You know, that is what's most important here. And so being able to help clinicians and patients alike be able to understand this as we continue to learn about it more and more, because that's the reality. We're still learning. We're still understanding what these techniques are really doing. I think it's so important. And I know you work both with clinicians and patients. So can you tell people where they would find, you know, how to work with you and where that is?
Sure. You can find me at Modern Manual Therapy on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And if you just Google my name, Urson Religioso, you'll just get like one of my 50 websites that I do all by myself. I don't even have like a virtual assistant or anything.
Oh my gosh.
I literally edit all my videos and all my podcasts and do all my website coding all by myself. So, I know you guys are going to feature some of my stuff in your show notes. I also sell a ton of manual therapy stuff. I sell BFR, which if your audience hasn't tried BFR yet, or you guys haven't tried BFR, that's one of my big top sellers on Edge Mobility System. So yeah, I'm an easy person to find. Not too many people have my name. My dad's not very Googleable. So I think if you Google Urson Religioso, Edge Mobility System, or look at Modern Manual Therapy on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, find out. You can find me easily. I also do virtual visits. If you guys have any issues that are not being resolved, whether it's chronic injury, chronic pain, TMJ, headaches, running, you're having trouble hitting a PR, I can help if it's attached to your body.
Amazing.
That's fantastic. Dr. E, thanks so much for taking some time to come on with us, talk everything manual therapy, and we'll chat with you soon. Such a good interview with Dr. E. Love how he talks through manual therapy and how that can be beneficial to your system and your recovery journey. If you loved this episode, please consider sharing it out to family or friends who might be going to a physical therapist or a chiropractor and might need to hear some of these concepts that Dr. E helped us put out there. Also consider leaving a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. If you're looking for an additional way to support us at the Optimal Body Podcast, please consider buying our Optimal Body Therapy Kit. You can find the link for that down in the show notes. And we have a special code OPTIMAL25 to get you 25% off all the bands, sliders, and tools that you need to continue developing and progressing on your movement journey. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.